Hello and welcome to another episode of On My Last Eggs. I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I'm navigating the wild throes of perimenopause.
I never thought anything was going to wow me more than when I joined the Menopause Charity and the number of women who take on the most incredible challenges.
I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails, with plenty of lols and some WTFs along the way.
Women who are going to row the Atlantic, fuelled by menopause. We've had a woman run from John O'Groats to Land's End, fuelled by menopause.
I'm very excited to welcome to On My Last Eggs this week the CEO of the Menopause Charity, Jenny Haskey. Hello, how are you?
Hi, wonderful to meet you.
Now, you did a little, when I said the CEO of the Menopause Charity, you did a little kind of face that said, oh, yeah, that's me. Oh, gosh. Which I feel, and I've looked at your LinkedIn. You are an incredibly accomplished woman who absolutely deserves to be CEO of the Menopause Charity. But in that little look then, I got, however hard we work at it, our tiny smidge of imposter syndrome that we all have.
100%. It's just that, I'm very much not about titles and all about, just the reality. So hugely proud, incredibly proud to be leading the organisation. But yeah, the imposter syndrome, hey, that goes along with menopause as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it goes on with being a woman and then you hit menopause and it's suddenly just at the point when you should be so full of confidence at all the things you've achieved and nailed and got through. And then you're like, oh, hello, I've lost all the confidence. What's going on there?
100%. But like I say, it's less about the titles. It's more about actually what's the impact that we can make at the organisation.
Well, we're going to talk about that because you do have a background of making impact. You're used to working with charities, healthcare charities, and getting in there and shaking it up. But first of all, we had Radhika Vora on last week, who is part of the Menopause Charity. And I said to her, are you menopausal? Because you look about 30 something. And she's like, yeah, I am. You know, I'm 45. And I find it very difficult to age. So I'm going to ask you if you have a menopause journey, because again, you look very youthful and fresh faced.
So I get this quite a lot. And I also get when I'm out at events, you're too young to know anything about this. So I am perimenopausal. I'm also 45. It's not a condition that everybody involved in the charity has to be that age. But yeah, I'm also 45. But my journey, I've been perimenopausal for many years. I've appreciated those struggles in my 30s, throughout my 20s and 30s, actually. So know how difficult and challenging women's health can be and getting the right care and support. But equally, I wish what I know now, I knew back then. So I wish I was far more aware of hormones. I wish I had the confidence that I've always had in my day job to actually really focus on my women's health journey. It can be a battle and it shouldn't be.
So you said you've been in perimenopause for many years, which makes me feel an early perimenopause journey, which is even harder to detect. I only realised I was in perimenopause at 51, which is when you're supposed to menopause, and no one had talked to me about it. But for you, I'm guessing it started, you know, quite a bit earlier, at a point where no one would see it coming.
Yeah, so like I say, a slightly different journey for me in that, as I mentioned, in my 20s and 30s, I had lots of women's health concerns, women's health issues, really heavy periods, horrendous pain, lots of investigation. I was put in clinical menopause to try and work out what was wrong. Nobody could work it out. So they just said, hey, here's a Mirena coil. You won't have periods, therefore you don't have the bleeding and the pain, problem solved. So never really got to the bottom of it.
Mirena coil, it's like the plaster for the biggest bleed ever.
Yeah, so for years, fantastic, that box has been put on one side and I could get on with life. But yeah, it masks knowing then the journey. Yes, we never really got to the bottom of what my issues were that were all clearly hormone related. But then, yes, that's why knowing and understanding the symptoms of perimenopause was really crucial for me, because I didn't have a change in periods to be able to recognise. So it's that joining of dots that it's that knowledge and that understanding. So it's only really because of, you know, the fantastic awareness that's been happening and building for a number of years that has helped me get to the point where I can make those lifestyle changes and get that treatment to support me. But yeah, the Marina Coil has been a godsend for me to be able to continue functioning really for many, many years.
Yeah, it definitely did that for me. So 2.5 years, pretty much, you've been in post as CEO of Menopause Charity. I'm going to keep saying it. I know you don't like titles. I want it to sink in. You're a big, important, badass lady, Jenny. Let's go with that. You know, it's interesting, isn't it, with the whole menopause explosion, if you want to call it that, because, you know, it is everywhere. It's still not everywhere, but it's everywhere in comparison to how it was a few years ago. I started this podcast 2.5 years ago. It's definitely much bigger since then.
Yeah. Menopause is on the agenda. Menopause is being spoken about in places that before it never has been, but there's still a hell of a long way to go. There are still parts of society where we need to normalize the conversation. And if there is an element of influencers is beneficial, then great. If that reaches people, you know, a number of people that say to me, that Davina documentary saved my life. At the same time, I have a number of people saying to me, I didn't even know there was a menopause charity. So we have to remember, and as you say, my background is charities. 2.5 years old for a charity is really young in our journey. So we are young. It is a fantastic, it's an exciting time to have a charity. As for many things, do we, you know, should there be a charity? Because should this be an issue, or actually should for all of these years women have been able to access the right care, the right support, the adequate treatment? That's a big philosophical discussion for another day, maybe. But yeah, it's a great
time.
Oh, I
love a philosophical discussion, Jenny, especially about menopause. But you're absolutely right. It shouldn't be down to a charity. And then, like you say, you know, let's just have a spin-off philosophical discussion, because it's not just menopause. Mm-hmm. You know, if you put a charity in place, I'm trying to think of the amazing cancer charity that does Raise for Life, Cancer Research UK.
Cancer Research UK,
you know,
yeah.
You put a charity in place who receive no government funding, they are a charity. I used to do a bit of work with them, and people's minds are blown when they realise that actually they're just a charity, and the work they're doing is incredibly impactful. And they put lots of money into it, and lots of amazing, groundbreaking, world-changing research they do. And they're a charity. And, yeah, you know, does it give the government and the powers that be the chance to sit back and go, well, Cancer Research UK got that sorted. Phew, we don't have to do it. And there is a danger, isn't there, that it lets the powers that be off the hook if someone's doing it for them.
Yeah. Equally, I've also always caveated it as much as, you know, as much as in my job, I'm here to ultimately make myself redundant, because we need to get to a place where a menopause charity isn't needed. That said, knowing what I do of charities, more often than not, because of funding, because of the fantastic support from so many people, charities are able to make change happen. Charities are able to offer the kind of support and reach the kind of people that maybe would not normally access it through the infrastructure that is in place. Though sometimes it's about the going the extra mile. And that's what charities are able to do, is to actually make sure that we can create impact. We can make that difference that, as we've seen for decades, women's health wouldn't progress if it wasn't for so many charities and for the fantastic campaigners, the fantastic supporters that are all coming together to make change happen. So yeah, we shouldn't be needed, but hey, we are, and we are seeing a difference. We are seeing people get the support that they need. And I think as menopause is being so over-commercialized at the moment, so great that we're all talking about it, the over-commercialization, whilst it's keeping it on the agenda, can equally be really challenging. So if you are suffering, if you are vulnerable and you are desperate, and we know that sadly many women are, then actually, you know, they could be being targeted with products or information that's actually not going to help them. So for us, the menopause charity is absolutely about educating everybody so that perimenopause, menopause is understood and that everybody has access to trusted information. If we know, if we understand what's happening, if we understand what we can do, so if we understand the lifestyle changes, the treatment options, the evidence base behind those treatment options and understanding those risks and benefits, if we have access to that, then we know women are more likely to get and reach the treatment and make the difference that they do. So it's a simple thing, but it's a powerful thing, especially, like I say, the number of women that come to us and say, your information saved our life. I mean, that's tiny, it's powerful. That's really huge.
The highest category of suicide rates, I think, with women is between women of like 46 and 55. You know, it's screaming at you, isn't it? You know, and I'm a member of so many different sort of menopause groups on Facebook and things. You know, the amount of people I see saying, I've got my dream job, I've just been given a dream promotion, but I think I'm going to have to leave because I can't deal with it, or I can't bear the way my husband puts his socks on, I'm going to have to kill him. These are really huge impacts in women's lives, aren't they?
100%. And, you know, it is an exaggeration. We're not here to exaggerate. We don't get anywhere by exaggerating. I think the psychological symptoms of menopause are the ones that are most devastating. Because we touched on it at the very beginning. It is that confidence. It is that niggling. You can't quite put your finger on it. I know that there's something different in me. I'm not like I was in my 30s. You know, and those psychological symptoms when you're questioning yourself and you're doubting yourself, then layer on lots of the complexities of other mental health issues, the impact of the physical symptoms, the lack of sleep. We can just be so overwhelmed. We can feel like we're drowning. So those stories of women who reach out and say, you've helped me turn my life around, I'm now thriving. And sometimes it's not always about somebody who's even reached that absolute depth of suicide, although sadly there are countless stories of that. You touched on the number of women that genuinely leave their jobs or don't go for that promotion. And then when they just make one small lifestyle adjustment, actually suddenly it's that light bulb switch. Sometimes it's just knowing, actually, just sometimes it's just having that diagnosis. To then have that confidence to move forward and refocus. Quite often when we're at events, some women will say, oh, it didn't affect me. I breezed through it. And that's fine. And that's fantastic. And then we'll chat a little bit more. And actually, they'll talk about some of the sudden life-changing moments that they have. So they may not have experienced lots of symptoms that made them struggle, but all of a sudden they left a perfectly happy marriage, they traveled the world or totally changed their job. So brilliant, actually. And this is great, and often it is, we're really changing in our lives. So I think more stories that we can share, actually, it is really helpful and beneficial to people.
It's such an interesting point, the old sort of menopause denier. Some of the guests I've had on here, Louise Newson, who is a menopause expert, didn't spot her own signs of perimenopause. And they were all mental, you know, brain fog, not being able to, you know, do a job as well. Carolyn Harris, MP, who campaigns on behalf of women, didn't realise that her symptoms were menopause.
I've spoken to so many women who are clinicians or who work in a kind of healthcare setting. And their partners are clinicians or have worked in a healthcare setting. And absolutely, for long periods of time, they're scratching their head as to why you're behaving in this way. And then light bulb moment. And it's just sometimes that recognition and understanding. And for some of us, it might be kind of thinking about, okay, this is a new phase in my life. And that can take some adjustment for some people. But when we can adjust, when we've not got the symptoms, when we can control ourselves, when we understand the little tiny steps that we can make in those lifestyle changes to make a difference, actually, it can mean so much more for, as I say, for us to go on and thrive, because we've got a hell of a long journey ahead of us. We're all, you know, living so much longer now, so don't we want to be really healthy and thriving through that? I don't want to think of, you know, the little old lady that maybe so many of us when we were younger had this vision of, you know, somebody who was post-menopause is tiny little old granny who's struggling to walk.
And I'm struggling to walk right now. And I am actually a granny, but I'm not the little old lady. But I think, you know, thriving is a really important thing. And I think I hear a lot of women as well talk about coming out the other side and it being better now. Maybe that's because they're on HRT and they're going to stay on HRT for many, many years. But maybe, you know, they didn't go on HRT or they went on HRT for a while and then decided to, you know, that they could do without it. Because there is, for many women, not for all women, there is a calm and a plateau on the other side of the erratic, crazy hormonal changes of perimenopause. A, we need to get the help that we need when we need it. But B, we need to know that even in that darkest moment, even in those struggles, it's not going to be like this forever. You know, with or without help, it's probably going to change when that crazy, you know, spiking and plummeting of hormones changes. You know, it's probably going to be better on the other side. And I'm embarrassed that I might be about to quote Winston Churchill or get it wrong. But I think it was Winston Churchill that said, if you're going through hell, keep going, because obviously you want to get out the other side. It's an important thing to remember that while we need all of this help and support and all this knowledge, that to keep that word thrive in our minds, because actually that is what's on the other side. And often a lot of the other burdens of life might have fallen away by that point as well.
Yeah, I think overwhelm is a word that I use an awful lot during this perimenopause, menopause journey, because it's overwhelming because our bodies are reacting in a way. And as you said, they're fluctuating so much. So how I was yesterday could be really different to how I might feel today. Recognizing and knowing that, yes, there is going to be that point of calm in the future. It's not forever, but that can be really difficult when day to day is a struggle and is a battle, isn't it? So it is information, knowledge is power, helping us join the dots. I think joining the dots and knowing first and foremost is brilliant. And knowing that, yes, it isn't forever, and that the things that you do today can help you day to day, but also help you in that future life. I think that's really important. I think quite often we don't talk about the future health benefits as well, about making changes now so that we can thrive. But looking forward is, whilst it can feel impossible sometimes in these points of overwhelm, is really important. What I absolutely love, and as you say, I've worked in charities for an awful long time, and I've always been blown away and in awe of people who challenge themselves. And I've seen people do incredible challenges. I never thought anything was going to wow me more than when I joined the menopause charity. And the number of women who are fueled by menopause and take on the most incredible challenges. And it is all because of this point in their life where they've kind of grabbed menopause, they've kind of taken the bull by the horns, and then they've gone, right, I'm not going to let you stop me. I'm not going to let you grind me down. And that's women who are going to row the Atlantic. I have a number of women. We've just had one lady who's rowed the Atlantic. We have more to come, fueled by menopause. We've had a woman run from John O'Groats to Land's End, fueled by menopause. You know, we have people who aren't, you know, naturally that way. Quite often these are women who have never done anything like this before. They're like, I'm not a runner, but something that I took up to help support me through this journey, and now I'm going to challenge myself. And I think it's that you don't have to do these big, great, fantastic challenges, but even celebrating doing a 5k walk, the benefits of giving yourself some kind of self-satisfaction of doing an activity, challenging yourself, but then also getting outdoors. You know, we know the health benefits, the proven health benefits, the mental health benefits. So I just think it's actually can be a really exciting time when we can get through the overwhelm and then suddenly go, ta-da, right, look at me. I'm dealing with menopause. I'm taking what life's throwing at me, but I'm not going to let it stop me. And I think that's a really important message for everybody to cling on to.
I like what Jenny's saying about challenges. I feel like menopause has sapped my oomph sufficiently that I haven't even thought about setting myself a challenge since COVID, since my mum getting ill, my flock of grandchildren expanding, my waistline expanding, my sleep contracting, and my brain becoming a dried up old walnut that can't remember the word for the thing you boil water in. But all that naysaying stops now. Inspired by Jamie Arons, the 43-year-old woman who just set a new world record for climbing all the Munro Mountains in Scotland. That's 282 of them, non-stop in 31 days, 10 hours and 27 minutes, smashing the previous record held by a man by over 12 hours. Since I read about Jamie and her amazing feat of ultra strength and power, I've set myself a challenge, and the training, my friends, starts now. Oh, God, I'm dizzy. Oh, wow. Oh, this is harder than I thought, but I've got to push myself. I've got to dig deep. I've got to find the reserves that I know are there. I can do this. I've got this. With the strict training schedule, in just 3 months' time, I should be able to get out of the car after a one-hour drive without hobbling like a little old man. No more shaming myself at petrol stations. No more pretending to just enjoy a little look around standing by the car door before I attempt to put one foot in front of the other, hoping that I haven't seized up completely. I haven't been able to do this for a couple of years now, so this is a huge undertaking, but I've got this. Normal walking after getting up in any normal place, like maybe a restaurant, having sat there for an hour, or a bar. Normal walking to a toilet from a table is coming. Here I come. I can do this. I can do this. Oh, exhausted myself. Should we go back to Jenny Haske? In my late 40s, I did an MA and then a PhD. A PhD I didn't need, and I don't really know why I did it. And halfway through, I hated it and didn't want to do it, but I was like, I'm halfway through now, I've got to keep going. And I took some time off work to finish my PhD. And at the end of my PhD, literally the day after I handed it in, I got in a tiny micro camper van, a converted Bilingo, and drove around Europe on my own for 2 months. And that included a 10-day solo walk with wild camping around the island of Menorca. And do you know what? When I was brewing up for the walk, so obviously I had to travel, you know, to get there, and I was a bit nervous, and I had all my kit and never got the right stuff, and I had to carry all my water, and it was, you know, it was all very daunting, and I was quite unprepared, but I did prepare a bit for it. And while I was doing a couple of practice walks, I suddenly realized that actually a challenge is such a good thing for the soul. Now, sometimes you're at rock bottom, you couldn't even think it'd be a challenge to get in the shower, challenge to get your pants on. And so that's probably not the time. But when you're in a bit of a state of flux, or a bit of a, like you say, you know something's changing, and maybe, and I've never really put two and two together, the fact that I was 51 when I did that, and that I was, you know, really just at the beginning of understanding I was even having a menopause journey. So I would advise to people to try and think of a challenge for themselves, and it might just be to learn to knit. You know, it doesn't have to be walking around Menorca.
It's just great to give us some kind of positivity, something focus, something to channel our enthusiasm to. But also, like you say, yeah, take up knitting, because that focus, that dedication, that self-care, that time for you, when there is so much going on in our lives. And I know quite often when we talk about kind of prioritizing self-care and finding time for you, quite rightly, lots of women say, how on earth do you expect me to do that? I've got young children, I'm juggling menopause, I've got work, you know, I've got to run a household. And I recognize and appreciate how difficult that can be. If that is absolutely doing what you must do to find time to run a bath, you know, even though that can feel overwhelming and difficult, if you can just do something for you in that day, if it is just as you get into bed at night, finding time to do a deep breathing exercise, you're starting that daily habit of prioritizing you that little bit. And these tiny little adjustments are that great path of slowly starting to make those lifestyle changes, but doing what you can. And like I say, it doesn't have to be, when we talk about prioritizing self-care, you don't have to go and do a yoga class for an hour, or as you say, suddenly take up a massive challenge. But if it's just adding the daily habit of the breathing exercise that you can do, hey, we all go to bed at some point, so just when you first get into bed, if that's the only time you can find it, but just, you know, we've got some great little bits on our social media and our website, some little videos. It's a minute to just calm. And you know, when I struggle to sleep at night and I've got loads of things whirring around my brain, if I remember, when I remember, just quickly do that little deep breathing exercise. So easy. And the sense of calm, and just that kind of that little bit of focus, not long before I then fall asleep. And I've never really been one that's great at sleeping. So yeah, it's just these little things that we can do actually, but that can help us get through this.
And you're right, your website and your social media are a great source of information. And it's interesting you mentioned little things, because actually I think it's quite, now this might sound derogatory, but I can't think of a better word, it's quite snippet based. It's not like you have to read a big, long section on something necessarily. You know, there's lots of little takeaways that you can dip into, I think, with the Menopause Charity, which kind of feels very tailor-made for us in our busy lives, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's what's really important. I've come back to this world overwhelm. So if I'm struggling, and like I say, if I've got all of those juggles going on outside, I haven't got time to read, you know, lots of long things and then sit there and panic and go, well, I can't do all of these. I might not have the brain space to be able to do that. So it might be that I need to take some of these little snippets to help to get me to a point where actually, okay, now I've found some time, or now I'm ready to take on a little bit of deeper understanding. We're a charity that is based and steeped in education. We want to educate everybody. We're not saying everybody has to become a menopause expert. Actually, what we want you to do is to understand your body, to join the dots, and then go and see your GP, because ultimately it's your healthcare professional that's going to ultimately help you and support you through this the very best. Tiny little adjustments. Let's not overwhelm everybody into thinking that they need to suddenly completely overhaul their diet, you know.
Or row the Atlantic.
Yeah, or row the Atlantic. Exactly.
Because that could really increase your overwhelm.
Exactly.
I don't even have a boat. What am I going to do?
Exactly. You know, I'm not going to totally change my diet. I know that. However, if I can just make one small change, I was chatting with a great nutritionist just last week, and you know, some great advice. If you do one thing, add more broccoli to your diet. I can do that. That's achievable.
Broccoli, you know, every day, I say. I'm a big broccoli fan.
There you go.
My partner's like, why have you bought more broccoli? I'm like, because we've eaten all the broccoli we had. We've got to keep the stocks up.
That's it. And it's just so simple. Your journey through menopause is really different to mine. So what works for you is going to be really different for me. So if I take these little tiny snippets, I can try them. Does that work? No, but I'll try this. Whereas maybe if I try and overhaul everything or do too much,
you're not even going to know what works.
Exactly. So yeah, baby steps, little snippets.
Let's talk strategy, because I know that you're a woman who is big into strategy, and I'm assuming that a lot of your strategies are paying dividends right now with the Menopause Charity. What is your strategy for the next 2.5 years, 5 years, you know, and where do you want the Menopause Charity to be, or what impact do you want it to have?
We want to educate everybody so that people really understand perimenopause, menopause. So great that we have women understanding, and other individuals who are experiencing menopause are understanding the changes that are happening to them and know what to do next. There's still more work to do on that. There's more outreach that we desperately want to do and reach people in society who menopause isn't talked about in their communities, or it's not accessible. You know, social deprivation, it's absolutely huge. We've just talked about broccoli. For some people are struggling to put food on the table, so me saying eat a bit more broccoli, that's, you know, not realistic. So our outreach is a huge big focus for us. Great that menopause support is out there, but actually, is it having that impact? And how do we make sure it's reaching people? So making sure that women have access to adequate treatment and support and appropriate treatment and support. It's also about making sure that family, friends, co-workers, employers, healthcare professionals, and lots of other key workers that we come across in our daily lives, that they have the right information, the right resources to provide appropriate support and signpost. You know, that's absolutely huge, because actually 51% of the population are going to experience menopause, but it impacts 100%, right? Because everybody's going to feel, and recognize and see menopause. But not everybody in society knows menopause, understands menopause, knows that it's more than a change to periods, hot flushes, and rages. So we need everybody not to become menopause experts, but to understand, just understand, these are the symptoms, this is what I might witness, this is what might help, and actually this is what I signpost, this is how I listen and show some empathy. So there's some simple little things that our loved ones, our family, our co-workers can have. We know that there continues to be more work to better educate our GPs. Fortunately, the new crop of GPs, there's lots more people being interested. But it's wider than that, actually. How can we upskill our pharmacists? How can we kind of consider some simple changes within our healthcare infrastructure? How do we make sure that dentists know some of the symptoms to recognize and actually then know how to signpost somebody, how to have that conversation? Could it be your hormones? You know, and equally key workers in lots of other charitable organizations. So I'm a great believer in collaboration rather than duplication. So we know about the impact of mental health on women. And I would probably say a lot of women in their early 40s are starting to see the signs of perimenopause with psychological symptoms. So actually, if we upskill our mental health first aiders with simple information in terms of actually, these are some of the signs to recognize, maybe ask the question, this is how to signpost. Let's empower people to have a good conversation with their GP. Almost half of all women, actually, as part of a survey of the Fawcett Society, hadn't approached their GPs. So we know that lots of women have bad experience. And like I say, in my 20s and 30s, I've experienced that the bad side of GPs telling me that genuinely you're a woman, just get on and deal with it. I know what that's like. When it came to my diagnosis for perimenopause, it was fantastic. It was seamless. And quite often when I come across women who are looking for help and I ask if they've spoken with their doctor won't help them. When we pick away and I actually ask a little bit further, quite often they've not even attempted to make an appointment. And I think that sometimes, again, we touched on that lack of confidence, that imposter syndrome. Sometimes people want to know that they're going to, if they talk about how they're feeling because they're not quite sure, they want to know that it's going to be received well. They want that validation. And because of the bad stories of GPs, they're sometimes nervous and anxious about speaking to a GP in case the GP doesn't tell them what they maybe want to hear. If unfortunately you are in that bracket where maybe your GP is unhelpful, what to do next? How do you move forward rather than then just giving up? Because I think that's something else that I see is a lot of women then give up. And yeah, we don't want that. No. And equally, an awful lot of women who start HRT, it's talked about, so it's the magic bullets. They try it and a few months in, oh, well, it's not worked for me, so I've stopped. I'm like, go and speak to your doctor, talk about those, you know, the symptoms, what has maybe improved, what hasn't. Keep that conversation with your healthcare professional going, because sometimes it's just about making tweaks and adjustments. You know, we're going through this fluctuating period. Things are going to constantly chop and change. And, you know, there are different solutions and different options. So it's not giving up at almost that first hurdle. And I think sometimes it's changing that narrative and reminding people that, yeah, HRT isn't going to, you're not going to wave that magic wand and be fixed overnight, but actually treatment is also about a holistic approach. So HRT on its own isn't going to help you. It is about making some of those small lifestyle changes that we've talked about. It's the combination, but like I say, making sure that this information is there for all in society. You know, we know that there are deep-rooted health inequalities. Well, if a charity is here to do anything, then it's to tackle those health inequalities and make sure that, you know, this isn't just something for white middle-class women, but actually it's something for all.
You mentioned collaboration, and I love the idea of talking to dentists. I went to my dentist yesterday and he said, I've got gum problems and they've got worse. And I've been really looking after my gums, me and my Jim, my gum doctor, I call him. And we've been doing this for a few years and it suddenly got worse and we couldn't say why. And he said, have you changed any medication? I said, well, I am on HRT. And he said, oh, well, it can increase plaque. He said, but in your case, I don't think it's a big problem. I don't think it's the HRT. But even the fact, I think if I'd said that to a dentist 10 years ago, they might not have known anything about it, you know, and it is interesting that we're moving forward in that way. But I want to talk about collaboration potentially or not of other kind of menopause organizations or charities that have come to the fore. So you've got Diane Danzibrink with Make Menopause Matter and her wonderful booklet that she's brought out recently. And you've also got the Menopause Mandate group of incredible, powerful women agitators, I like to think of them as. Do you sort of work across with each other? Are you sort of staying in your lanes? Are you all working together to be some giant throbbing woman force?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I was on a webinar just yesterday with Diane as well. You know, we all complement each other. We're all doing our specific aims in terms of what we're here to do, but we absolutely recognize it's a jigsaw puzzle, isn't it? We all have to come together to make that greater good. So it would be foolish for us to duplicate or replicate or compete. Ultimately, our ambition is all the same. Change is what we want to do, change for good. We're not going to get there if we're competing, but if we're collaborating, if we're working together, if we recognize our strengths and pull those strengths, then absolutely we're ultimately making the change for women's health. And that's what is important. And it's collaborating wider than just menopause, because, you know, menopause does probably touch so many different elements. And we collaborated with Dementia UK, for instance, last year on their brochure, because we're not the experts on dementia, just as Dementia UK aren't the experts on menopause. If we pool that knowledge, if we pool our expertise, we can achieve so much more. And I think that's why collaboration, coming together, that knowledge is power. It's really important. That's what's going to create change. I think it's about wisdom, isn't it?
Wisdom. What a great place to wrap this up, the wisdom, because we are so wise. Us, you know, we've got to this point and we've gathered all this information along the way. And a lot of it at the time we might not even have thought was very important. And then like the jigsaw puzzle that you mentioned, you could slot all these things together and make something, you know, really powerful out of it.
It's believed that it's humans and a few whales are the only ones that experience menopause. And actually, you know, we know when we talk about whales that it's viewed that the role post-menopause is for that wisdom, is to protect for and ensure the survival of their future offspring. So maybe it's time for us to recognize that actually this is our role. You know, we didn't used to live as long as we do now. We didn't used to live past menopause. So let's recognize that this time post-menopause is about wisdom, is about ensuring the survival of women.
Be more whale.
Be more whale. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Jenny Haskey, CEO of the Menopause Charity and many other great things besides. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on My Last Legs today.
Oh, thank you so much. Great chatting.
Thanks again to Jenny Haskey. Next week, I'll be talking to founder of Menopause Knowledge, Aline Boblin, who is running menopause community workshops in the West Midlands. We'll find out more about that. Have a great week.